Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, June 5th, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind, and more importantly, what's on your heart. I'll be there for you, just like the theme song of the hit 90s sitcom Friends. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 170. I have a very special guest. Haven't had a guest in a while. A man, a comedian, and a father, Dan Cummins. Had the pleasure of working with him this weekend at Levity Live, and we were talking in the green room pretty much right before he went on the stage. Just really cool dude. I was like, look, man, you want to do my podcast or what? Come on. And he obliged, and he was kind enough to sit down and talk to me for an hour plus. So I'm going to bring that to you in a few minutes. Just a little something. Oh, man. So I just got home from the last show, and it was fun. Had a great weekend emceeing. John Moses was on the show featuring. Had a great time hanging with him and shooting the shit. Got to get John on the show soon, too. Just like this NBA Finals, man, it's really, really depressing. As you know, I'm a big LeBron fan, Cleveland fan, and just looks like nobody really gives a shit on that team except LeBron, and it's really showing. So I'm kind of sad. I think it's over. I really do. I think it might be a sweep, because it just doesn't seem. I don't care. Like the road team, you don't the bench players or the role players don't play well on the road. That's bullshit, man. You gotta come and play. LeBron's got all these miles on him. He's, you know, everybody talking about this guy's in decline, and he is to a certain degree, but he's still playing. A declining LeBron is still better than majority of the NBA. And you can't let a team, like from top to bottom, the Warriors are so good. They're so deep. And Curry, I just got in. They said Curry only played 25 minutes because they were up by so much. And it's getting fucking ridiculous that it's just out of hand. And it's not even fun to watch. I don't even want to watch it anymore, man. Like, it sucks. I really want him to complete this narrative, but it doesn't seem like his teammates want it. They don't want it bad enough. Let's do some movie reviews, and I will bring you to my conversation with Dan. I saw a couple of movies this week. I saw on, Thursday, I went to see this movie that I've been wanting to see for quite some time when I've heard about it, when I saw the trailer. This movie called A Bigger Splash, starring Tilda Swinton and Ralph Fiennes. 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb. I was kind of excited to see this movie, and the acting was good. It's not something that you need to run out to the theater and see. If you waited a couple months to see it on demand, or if it comes to Netflix, you'd be entertained. I'll read you the synopsis. While vacationing on a Sicilian island with her boyfriend, a rock star, Tilda Swinton, receives an unexpected visit from an old flame, Ralph Fiennes, and his seductive daughter, played by Dakota Johnson. The boyfriend is played by Matthias Schneritz. He was in Far from the Madding Crowd and some other stuff. And it's really good acting. I felt like this movie, it's one of those movies that maybe I was a little annoyed by this movie because I was at a time constraint, because I went to see the movie and I said, what time does this movie end? And they were like 7:20, and the show started at 7:30. So I was like, okay, I'll have time. It's like a couple minutes away to just walk. Like the movie theater is right by the club. It's like a less than 5 minute walk. And so I was like, okay. But then it just kept feeling like it was dragging and dragging. And normally I like movies that take their time. When a movie takes its time, this one, it was just kind of like, Tilda Swinton's great. She spent most of the movie not really being able to talk. She plays this, she plays this David Bowie-esque rock star, and she has this surgery, and she's on vocal rest, and she's at a crossroads in her career. So that's pretty neat to see. And the dynamics are really interesting. The more I explain this movie, the better it is. But I think I was just annoyed because I had to be somewhere. And I'm really anal about time. And the show started like 10 or 15 minutes later anyway. Solid movie. It's not something that you have to rush out and see. But I did enjoy the intensity. So I would give this, it's an above average movie. It's not a bad movie. So Bigger Splash, see it whenever. I also saw on Friday, I saw Pop Star, Never Stopping, the Lonely Island movie. I'll read you the synopsis. Childhood friends Connor, Andy Samberg, Owen, Jorma Taccone, and Lawrence Akiva Schaefer found fame and fortune after forming the hip-hop group The Style Boys. Owen and Lawrence faded into the background when frontman Connor left the band to launch a successful solo career. Now the egotistical singer decides to film a documentary about his life while he's still on top. When his second album flops, the camera is there to capture his world come crashing down. That really tells you the whole fucking movie. And it's not really spoiling anything. It's people are billing this as the next Spinal Tap. And Spinal Tap is known by many to be this very like a classic mockumentary. And I don't know if I want to give Pop Star that. I think it has to live a lot longer than just less than a week. But I would say this movie is funny. It's enjoyable. Like, they lampoon pretty much everybody. One guy in particular was Macklemore, and the music is really funny. And I think they did one of the songs. I think the song is called Fuck Bin Laden, and they did it on the finale of SNL. But it's a funny movie, and it's probably one of the funniest movies I've seen, I want to say, since Spy came out last year. But yeah, so I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. It's definitely worth seeing. It's one of those movies, like, if you, I recommend it. I would say go see it if you're in the mood for something funny and you know, just a little, it's entertaining. I enjoyed the shit. How about that? All right, let's bring you to my conversation with Dan. I met Dan this week. He's one of those comics that I've seen his face in, like, you know, like on comedy club websites. I didn't know much about him, and I got to watch his set during the weekend. He's just like a really funny dude, really nice, really engaging. The first real conversation we had, we were riffing on, like, old school baseball players because we're around the same age, and just had a really good time talking to this guy. He's really funny, just a dude that's a real fucking pro at stand-up, and he's evolving and he's doing his thing and he's living his best life, you guys. And I really enjoyed talking to him, and this is my conversation with comedian Dan Cummins. There's a movie theater chain called the Bowtie Cinema, and every Tuesday they have cheap movie tickets, so it's like $6.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, well, if I can only pay $6, I can get candy.
Yeah.
And I got my candy, and then I said, I kind of want some of their popcorn.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was
$6.
Yeah.
Is it a second run movie theater?
No, it's not stadium. It's just they used to be called Clearview Cinema.
I don't know
and
that chain.
It's just like an East Coast type chain, like, I guess through, like, maybe Connecticut, maybe down to Maryland.
And they'll get new releases, huh? Like,
yeah, yeah. And,
wow.
And this one,
man,
in particular,
$6. That's like 1995 prices.
It's amazing. It's
that's crazy.
And I watched what was it, the new Colin Farrell movie, The Lobster, with him and Rachel Weisz.
I've heard very mixed reviews on that. Some people love it. Some people hate
it. It's weird. It's funny. It's quirky.
Yeah.
Like a little Wes Anderson-y.
It's Daniel Radcliffe, right? Harry Potter?
No. Are you talking about the one where it's like Swiss Army Man?
Oh, I get him confused. Isn't The Lobster where he thinks he's a lobster?
No, it's like The Lobster's a movie where like it's a dystopian society where if you're not in a couple, you have 45 days to find a mate, and if you don't, you become an animal. And the animal he chose was to be a lobster.
You literally become an animal.
Yeah.
Okay. I did. That is the one I heard of. There is the other one though. I got confused with where he thinks he's a Swiss Army knife or some other.
Yeah,
ridiculous absurdism.
The dude, we were talking about. There Will Be Blood last night.
Oh, yeah. Is that director?
No, but it's the guy, the dude that he kills at the end, that Daniel Plainview kills.
Oh, what is that guy's name? Because that kid is so good.
Jesus Christ.
I say kid. He's probably 40, but...
now I have to look it up.
Oh, man.
Paul Dano.
Yeah,
I have to look
it up. He plays a good, like, kind of creepy, weird character, you know?
Yeah, like, he's good at that. And it looks good.
Yeah.
It looks like something I would see, you know? I haven't really been that happy about movies this year. Are you a movie guy at all?
I am a movie guy. Like, my girl and I have been, like, we have a crazy living situation right now where we're, like, halfway through a move. Like, I'm still in L.A. for the year, but she's up in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
So we always watch movies together, and just because of circumstance, we don't see much. And usually when I'm with her, with the kids,
right?
So we'll see kids stuff. But what movie in the theater did I watch last? Man, I think, God, it's been a while. It was the DiCaprio, The Revenant, right before it went out of the theater.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
I thought it was great. You know, I thought it was, you know, just pretty, just the way it was shot.
Yeah.
And I knew there wasn't going to be a lot of dialogue going in. I knew it was just, you know, kind of like, it was what I thought it was going to be in a good way, you know? And I did watch a movie 2 weeks ago and I did not like it, really. It was the new Avengers one.
Oh, Civil War?
Civil
you didn't
War?
Like?
I thought they tried to get too dramatic.
You're one of the few dissenters.
But you know what?
Break it down. I have no stake in
it. We were talking the other day. I do like a lot of graphic novels, but I'm not that into many superheroes. Like, I'm a big Punisher fan, and I like Snyder's run on Swamp Thing, and I like most of Scott Snyder stuff, like Batman and stuff. But I'm not real into like the Marvel universe and all these guys. So I'll preface it with that by saying that I don't know the backstory of, like, say, the Black Panther.
Yeah,
and I don't know some of these. So just jumping in, not having seen previous things, maybe taking the time to research it, I just wanted action.
Right.
And I thought they spent a lot of time just kind of like, I thought the first half of the movie was super slow.
Okay.
And then once they got into it, I was like, okay, this is cool.
When they got to the airport, it seemed
picked
up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought it was cool. Like, I liked Black Panther. I was into that. I didn't know anything about it, but just all the hype around it. I mean, I was on a quest to get the action figure.
Right. Right.
But I feel like I'm regressing to a certain degree. Like, I'm 36.
Yeah.
And my listeners know that, like, I've kind of been like, Star Wars did it for me because I'm like, oh, you know, I tried to act like I was like above it all. Like, you know, it's for the nerds. And then I started to get excited about it. And then I bought a couple action figures.
No, man, I get it, man. If I had the space, I'll be doing the same thing. It's like, I feel like I do a lot of things for my kids that are really for me. You know, it's like I use that. Like, if I didn't have them, I would just, it's funny. My girl makes fun of me all the time because she's like, because, you know, that's so unattractive to a lot of women.
Yeah.
But I'm like, who, what, why?
It dries their vagina up.
It does, but I'm like, why? Like, I was telling her, I'm like, if I didn't have money concerns, I'm like, or didn't care as much about money, I'm like, I would love to just like work at a comic book shop.
Mm-hmm.
And then she made some like snarky remarks. She's like, well, yeah, if you just didn't want to date anybody, I'm like, why you say that?
You could still, there are a
you
lot
can.
Of guys that I know, they have.
But because there's not a lot of money in it, it's not like a big career thing, but I'm like, I don't know. There are girls. I mean, there's one of the comic book shops I go to in L.A. There's a couple girls that work there that are super cool. You know, it's like, I mean, there are those girls. But predominantly, it's, you know, Comic-Con has opened it up definitely to more women.
Yeah.
But I feel like of our age group, like I'm 39, you're 36.
Right.
When I was 20, a girl who was super into comic books and video games and attractive was like a unicorn.
Right.
It, like, you know, like a Loch Ness monster. It's like, what? That's real? Like, it was, you couldn't
yeah.
believe it.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
not mainstream at all. So I feel like, but I love that stuff too. It's like, I got my son a PS4.
Right.
And honestly, like, he wanted it, but I was like, yes. You know, because, like, you know, I'm playing Madden with him, and I'm like, I played Madden with my friends when I was in high school.
Sure, of course.
This is awesome. And he's way into Star Wars, so I buy him. There's some new Star Wars.
Battlefront.
Yep, we got Battlefront. And we got some of the new comic books. I do, too. like, I was playing with a buddy. We were playing Call of Duty the other day. I hadn't played in forever, and it was so fun because he was a little older, too. He's older than me.
Okay.
And both of us kind of suck.
Right.
So it was fun to play each other. Where, like, I have fun with my son, but only because he's my son.
Yeah.
If he was any other human being playing me the way he plays me, I'd be like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a dick.
How old's your son?
He's 10, and okay. he just destroys me and talks smack. Like, I just, like, see how long I can run from him before he kills me.
Yeah.
And then he just kills me again and again and again. Like he's they're so good, like him and his, like, you know, buddies and stuff.
Because those games are supposed to be entertaining and make you feel good,
right?
And when it hits your self esteem, it's like I can have real life for this.
Oh yeah,
and
exactly.
It's just kind of like I don't know if I want to do this.
Right, right.
And you just drop $70 on a game that you kind of have to finish.
Right. God, that is funny. Like when a game affects your self esteem negatively, it's like. Like, I remember, like, you know, when I was, like, you know, 12 and life was so optimistic and idealistic, I'm like, I wanted to just thrash my friends. All I want to do is thrash everybody on those games. And now, even when I was playing my buddy in Call of Duty, we were like, should we go head-to-head? And I was like, no, I don't want to just have to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, I want to.
I like the way you said, I don't want to have to kill you, man.
I want random bots.
Yeah.
That I can kill them.
Right.
And we can both feel good about, like, I've got that guy.
Right.
Like, sad, older guy video game playing.
Yeah, I just got the shit beat out of me in NBA 2K playing the computer. I'm in a season with the Cavs.
Okay.
And LeBron has like a pinched nerve in his back now.
In the game?
In the game. And I was like, oh, fuck. And the Suns beat the shit out of me.
82 game season in the game?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like 24 and 5 or something like that.
And you're just playing a random AI computer
generated? Yeah, just the AI. Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. Like, how long are the quarters?
I do 8 minutes.
Okay, you can adjust to whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your record?
I think like 24 and 5, something like that. I'm pretty good.
Okay.
I'm okay.
Who you got starting in place of LeBron now?
Shumpert is playing the 3 and J.R. Smith is the 2, so.
That's pretty crazy. And you have no control, right, over like when he comes back?
He can come, like he comes back in little spurts. I throw him out there and he helped me win. He helped me beat the Trailblazers like a couple games back.
That's crazy. And I imagine they treat it like if he got that in real life, that based on how long it would take to heal and
1 to 2 weeks.
Man.
Yeah.
Pinched nerve, that's trouble, man. That's gonna come back.
Yeah, he's not done. He got like one dunk and like he was
doing
layups. Yeah. So I gotta keep him out.
You push him too hard, he's out of the playoffs.
Yeah, so I can't I'm in it's a tense times at my apartment.
God, I love that stuff. I wish I do love creating stuff and I do love working, but man, I used to play so many video games. I had to stop when I was like 24, something like that, 25.
Okay.
I got married real young.
How old were you?
I got married when I was 22.
Okay.
To my ex-wife. And we were like college sweethearts or whatever. And I got this game, and this wasn't even World of Warcraft. It was Warcraft 3, I believe. And instead of being like kind of like a first-person game where you're able to jump in, you know, I don't know what do they call that first, but it's like what Warcraft became, where you're like a little character.
It's an RPG type thing?
RPG, yeah. There we go. Where you can join in with other bands or whatever like that. This was just like, you are all of the orcs or all of the undead or all of the, I can't even remember, it's been so long, and you try and like snuff out all the other little tribes of people on this map. And so it shouldn't even be a game that should be that addictive, because it's like, you know, you've done it. It's like, all right, then it's over.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to, like, I don't know, kill him faster or kill with a different kind or whatever. I got super into it, like, as I always do. And I got so into this game. This was right when I was about to start doing comedy. And I was kind of – I had some off-time work. I didn't know what I was doing career-wise. But I would pretend to go to sleep with my ex-wife. I would lay in bed and pretend to fall asleep. And as soon as I thought she was asleep, I would sneak up and I would go play this game in the middle of the night. And I would play it for like 3-4 hours in the middle of the night.
Oh, shit.
Then I'd go back to bed. And then I would, if I woke up before her, I would, I would pretend to be asleep again until she left and then sneak out and play it again. Wow. And I would do that a lot. And then one day, I was supposed to get some stuff done. I told her, I was like, yeah, I'm going to stay. And I think I was starting comedy because I'm like, I'm going to work on some writing or blah, 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 blah. You know? And she goes to work. And I'm like, okay, I got 9 hours. So I'm going to play for like 3 hours. And I'm going to shower. I'm going to have lunch. And I'm going to have a productive afternoon.
Yeah.
And then 3 hours comes. And I'm just, you know. And I slept naked. I didn't even put clothes on. So I'm sitting naked.
Wow.
At the computer. Nope. I didn't even eat breakfast. I was like, I wanted to get playing immediately. And so I go play. And then, you know, I'm like, well, what does it matter? I'll play a little bit. I'll eat while I play.
Sure. Lunch.
So then I get some food. I still don't even put clothes on. I'm just sitting there, no shower, nothing. And the hours just keep going by and the rationalizations continue. And then pretty soon, she's like going to come in the door at like 5:30. It's like 5 o'clock. And I'm like, okay, seriously, Dan, like 5 more minutes.
Wow.
And then you take a shower and then you act like you did some shit today. And then minute, and I'm like, you can take a 2-minute shower. You can take a 60-second shower. And then the door rattles, and I'm like, ah, like she's home. I put on just pants.
Okay.
Like there was some pants. I put on pants, and I was like, hey, what's up? And she just like, she walks to the door. She's like, what are you doing? My hair's all greasy, like it is now, for the like, all messed up. I'm like, I clearly haven't brushed my teeth or showered or anything. I'm just wearing pants, no underwear, nothing else.
Wow.
And I actually thought about lying and telling her that I'd been just jerking off, because that seemed less pathetic. Right? And that was that was like my rock bottom. I took the game off my computer.
Wow.
I got rid of it. And then I tried a couple times later in life. I would get another console, and I had a PSP for a while. I had to give it away, because it's like crack for me. It's like I cannot control myself. I want to just keep, it's so much fun.
Wow, man, that's intense. I mean, I love games, but I've had a couple of those days in my 30s where it was just, I rented a game from Redbox and I played it for like 9 hours
right.
until I beat it. And then there was another game, The Last of Us, who my listeners know. There was a drinking game on this podcast.
Okay. Every
time I mentioned that game, everybody would be
that's funny.
Dead. And so, like, I played that game for, like, 11, 12 hours straight, just, like, going crazy.
Wow.
It's an amazing game.
I'd like to think of my age now, I wouldn't go so nuts. But here's the thing. I think about this. I've thought about this with media, with the quality of certain TV shows, the quality. Like, I got a stack of books I'm working on right now. Mm-hmm. I just have always been a media slut.
Me too.
Like, whether it's books, albums, movies, games. I love all of it. Like, there's a store in the Northwest called Hastings that is all of those things.
Okay.
And I'm like, I could just live here.
Is it like a Barnes & Noble type thing?
It's place, like, kind of, yeah. It's like a local Barnes & Noble, but it's like, it's a little heavier than Barnes & Noble on like comic books.
Okay.
Has a bigger movie selection. Maybe a little bit less on books.
I would love that. Was it just like a Northwest regional?
Yeah, regional chain.
Okay.
A lot of like anime type stuff and things as well. Kind of like a funkier, like a, I don't know, there is that kind of Northwest kind of personality. Where it's a little Comic-Con, I guess, but I see them a lot in Seattle, Portland, Spokane up there. Just the kind of kids like dress in black and just like way into anime, Pokemon.
Yeah.
Those types of things.
Sure.
It kind of caters a little more on that side than Barnes & Noble's will. But I just love that stuff. And I was thinking about, because like my fiance, Lindsay, she would much rather just have a conversation all the time or just go do an activity together. And I'm for that as well in certain amounts. But what I, like, nobody wants to hear this, but it's like the average conversation is going to pale compared to any great book. I mean, because I'm like, this author put thought into this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he spent 2 years crafting this story, and you would rather have me just listen to you talk about your aunt for half an hour. I'm like, that shit's weak compared to the story that this author, but you know, it's like, you gotta have the human interaction too. But I'm like, that's why I love, like, nothing beats a well-written story to me, whether it's a comic book, you know, like I said, or a well, you know, composed album. It's such a beautiful thing to me. Or a game.
Right.
Where she's like, why do you want to play that game again? I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, it's so amazing.
That reminds me of, like, in college, we had this, I forget the name of the book, but there was this author, Marshall McLuhan, and he had a saying called, like, the media is the message. So it's like, I shouldn't have brought it up because now I have to explain that.
Yeah.
But it was basically like, it's a difference between like a hot piece of media and cold media. And I forget what, in the intro, I'll probably
do like an asterisk thing.
Talk about it. So I'll make a note of that.
Yeah. But,
It's a certain way that it captures you and it brings you in.
Yeah.
Like TV is one thing and then like literature is another. But yeah, I was the same way. I still am the same way. I love like going, like we were talking last night about going into the video store.
Right.
Or the comic book store and you had a guy.
Yeah.
You like this comic book, you'll probably like this
one. Yep.
You know, and it's missing and it's so.
That's how I found Preacher.
Yeah, okay.
I was reading one called The Strain. It's a movie, a show on FX now.
Yeah.
And like and this, you know, when I was kind of getting into it more, and this guy was like, well, what kind of stuff do you like?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I like dystopian kind of, you know, apocalyptic stuff. And I definitely like a kind of like a Western, spaghetti Western type, you know, vibe too. And he was just like, I got something for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, his recommendation led to that. And I read a whole bunch of other Garth Ennis stuff. But you know, you're right. Like on the web, you know, they do have that. Customers who bought this also bought.
Right, but it's not the same.
Not the same.
It's just like you just, the smell, the way the place smells. It's just cold now. It's not the same. Like I sound like a black Andy Rooney every time I talk about it, but it's just, I just remember like going like after school, going to, like the record store and going, getting the tape, getting the CD and like opening the new, and you could smell it. There's a smell to it.
Yeah.
And seeing who wrote the thing, who produced it.
Dude, I like that too. I don't know why my psyche is this way, but like my process with stand up all these years, it's like, I didn't do it. It's been a weird week where I've been a little more alone than normal because there's no coffee shop right nearby.
Mm-hmm. But you are next to one of the best Stop and Shops in the area.
Grocery store.
Yeah, it's unlike any other. Like there's there's more. It's like it seems like there's more of a selection.
Yeah, I don't know that chain. So this one's my only experience. It's okay.
Like I mean, whatever. What's in LA? Like your Ralph's and
Ralph's. Uh-huh. Of course, the Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, and also like Safeway. You know, like Albertsons.
Yeah.
Those kind of chains.
This Kroger. One's like a northeastern type grocery store. And in Maryland, where I'm from, it's Giant.
Oh, I've
seen
those.
So it's like a different name.
Yeah.
But it's like that one has a wider selection. I think the deli's bigger. And
yeah. It's been some good food and stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes I go there. My dad used to work at a grocery store, so I kind of just pay attention to stuff a little more. And but yeah, you are in a nice.
Yeah, there's not usually I like to go to a coffee shop though, mm-hmm. because kind of like we're talking about comic book shops and this kind of stuff. I've always been like hermity, but I like to be around certain people. It's weird.
I'm that
it's
way
like,
too.
It's like that's why I like to go write in a coffee shop. I don't need to talk to everybody there, but I like being around some life while mm-hmm. I work on my stuff.
Yeah.
And same thing with like my girl and things. It's like I wouldn't want to just be some dude who never goes and talks to other people and is just alone all the time and doesn't have like, you know, any kind of interaction. Like if I was just doing that, but ideally I liked like my fiance to be around, but not necessarily needing me as her focus point.
Sure.
Like
sure.
That makes sense. You know, it's like if I could play a video game for a while and then occasionally talk to her and like hug her or whatever, and then go back to my game, I'm like, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. And she's doing her own thing.
Yeah. She's doing something. Yeah.
I need that too. Like we were talking about that earlier. Yeah. Like I just need to, that's something that I'm missing that I know that it's because it's a problem.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like I say sometimes, well, I'm not going to burn the bit, but I just feel like, that's something that in order to evolve as a human, you do need that interaction, a companion.
It is interesting. Some people seem to be okay without it, but I do think they tend to get a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like my manager, I probably shouldn't talk about it like this on a podcast, but like she's a nice lady and I've known her as a friend for a long time,
mm-hmm.
but she's very capable and happy alone. Like she's gonna be, I think, forever alone. Like I don't think she seems like, and that's her, to her, you know, she would say that.
Okay.
But then, you know, 4-5 years ago, she got this dog, and we joke about it, and it mm-hmm. is funny, but it's also just like, all right, you're way too into this dog. Mm-hmm. Like, she's become the weird dog lady.
Oh, okay.
You know, because she hasn't had, and she gets a little, I think, personally, like, eccentric in certain ways because there's no one in her life being like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Stop it. You know? Yeah. So, you know, you can do it alone, but I don't know. I do think it is nice. I get your craving and stuff like that where it's like you said, to evolve and grow. It's nice to have a check and balance situation at home.
Yeah. I just don't want my heart to calcify.
Yeah. And I feel like that happened with her. Like, it's going to be so hard for her to find somebody now because she's so, like, will not budge, will not compromise, doesn't want to risk putting herself out there anymore. It gets tougher as you get older.
Yeah, because even if you're in a relationship and it doesn't work out or you get divorced, you're living life.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have a line in your act where you say you have to take life out of the box a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And play with it a little. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to do that, and that's a part of being... Right. It's part of being an artist. Like if you want to call yourself an artist, I'm making air quotes. you have to do that sort of thing. So I'm kind of at the precipice of that, and just not being afraid to fail.
Yeah, that's right. And it's hard sometimes, man. It's like my girl and I've been talking about it this year. Where it's like I was joking around earlier today, actually, on the phone. I was like, you know what? I wanted to be up with her and the kids so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, on a day like today, I'm like, you know, I'm like, sometimes I think I could just go to Best Buy, get a job there, and just whatever, just live there. And she, right away, she's like, no, you couldn't.
Yeah, you probably couldn't.
Because she knows me. She's like, you'd be miserable.
Yeah.
You know, because as much as I want, like, sometimes more predictability in life and, you know, like, consistency, that it's weird to say, but the thought of a steady job where I would just kind of do the same thing all the time literally makes me feel suicidal. Like, why? I think about that, and I'm like, why don't I just kill myself then? Like, and I know it's not that dramatic. Yeah. I mean, for most people have that.
I understand.
That, but for some reason, my soul or whatever it is, my spirit or whatever like that, needs to be able to create. Not that I couldn't keep doing that if I had a job and maybe something else will change, but I just, if I did have one of those jobs, I would need to still have time to write something. I would need to have some kind of hobby where I'm creating, because otherwise... I don't know. Otherwise, I would just start thinking about, like, oh, this is all there is. I'm just going to do this, and then I'm going to die.
That's exactly what I'm going through now. Like, the job I've been at, I've been there almost 9 years in September. And I started stand-up, like, 2 years into that job. And it changed. Because if I look back, and my listeners know this, like, just looking back, I was probably depressed.
Yeah.
You know, just going to work.
Monotony,
watching ESPN and Grey's Anatomy, then going back to work. And because I was looking, I was looking for something. I was trying to recreate Chicago because when I was there, I was in my 20s. I was being fed artistically. I had a day job, but I was doing. And so when I did stand up, it was like, oh, okay, this changed. And then really the same things happen on a month-to-month basis at the day job.
Right.
There might be a little, this thing is happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it's like a hurry up and wait thing. It's just, it's not as big a deal as they make it.
Right, right.
So it's like I'm kind of, but that comfort is being disrupted now.
Yeah.
Because it's like I got a manager and like, oh, we got an audition for you.
Right,
and
right.
You know, it's a little thing, but, you know, it could build and, that's where the danger is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just
for
fun.
Me.
It's fun. It's fun to dream, you know? It's just like, no, wait a minute. You said the danger, though.
The danger is just like, oh, what if they say you can't use your personal days, or they're my days, you know?
Oh,
just
I see.
PTO
I see.
Days.
Where you're risking, like, the stability of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm talking about that in my stand up now, and it's just like, that's a real fear because my parents are old school. They're like, they're like, you go to work, and you get your check,
and
then you retire.
And there is validity in that.
Yeah,
you know, I get that. But yeah, but I understand. Like, I'm just not wired that way either. Because it's like so random what my mom gets proud about. But my I got a job at Playboy last year, just hosting some random show. But it was like the closest thing I've had in all of my comedy years to having a steady job. Because it was like it was a 2-year contract. And I'm not like weird about numbers or anything, but it just makes sense for this. But it was like $150 a year, you know, basically. And so, and my mom latched on to that number though, And she was like, oh my God, that's
because
great.
It's tactile for
it's
them.
Tactile. It's like, oh, it's like she could breathe again. She's like been worried about me for 15 years. She's like, oh, thank Christ. You know, yeah. Danny got a steady job. And then, but then like 6 months into it, I start telling her, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to stay here after this. I'm like, I just don't really enjoy
it. And she was
it.
Like, what the fuck?
Yep. It's like she yeah. was like, what's fun? And it's funny to me. It's like my job was working with like nude Playboy models and guests and stuff. So like
nice.
Not a job that a lot of moms would be like, yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
She didn't care about that part. She yeah. just cared. She cared that it was a brand that she recognized.
Right.
And, you know, it had some kind of credibility in her eyes.
Yeah.
And that it paid well. And for her, she was like, man, just ride it out. You work there as long as they'll have you.
Sure.
But yeah. I was like, no, that's not how I've lived my life, right or wrong. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I just try and follow like kind of whims of what I'm passionate about.
Yeah, I mean,
Eleanor Roosevelt, follow sure. your bliss. You know,
no, it's true because it's just like I guess it's a fear. It's not even, and I felt like I've learned this or I've had this for quite some time where it's just like, I'm not really afraid to fail.
Yeah,
I'm more afraid of like what happens when I'm afraid of not having that comfort.
Me too.
And it's just like, oh well, what?
That's
if
a valid
I do?
Fear, though.
Yeah, what if I do get this thing and I'm away? And then what happens when that's over?
Yeah, man. That's shit. That's my every year of my life.
Okay.
What happens next year? Like, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's because when you don't have that financial stability, you know, it's really, that's my greatest fear is just, frankly, just being old and broke. Mm-hmm. That's my greatest fear, you know, because I've seen it, though, too. It's like my dad has not managed his wealth very well over his lifetime. He would be the first to admit this. And he's had it, lost it, you know, like over and over. And now he's, I don't know, 60-something, 64, 65. And he's working so random out in New Guinea, Papua New Guinea, on these remote construction jobs because it pays a lot better than doing carpentry, especially his age in the States. And he doesn't have to swing a hammer. He's more of a supervisor. And that's good. But now, in order for him to have any chance of a retirement ever, he has to be away from everybody out there. And then, and he still, if that went away today, he'd still be broke in like, you know, 2 months. And I see what that looks like.
Yeah.
At 65. And I'm like, oh my God, please no.
Yeah.
Please, please. It's just my own personal, like, oh God, please let that not be me. So as much as you want to be artistic, an artist and whimsical and all that kind of stuff, it's tough when it collides with financial responsibilities, as it always does.
My dad used to say to me, he said, it's okay to dream, but don't let dreams be your master.
Man, that's a good one.
I don't know where he got, I don't know, I'm not going to say my dad coined that, but, you know, I think he got it from some poem or something.
That's a good one. That's a good one, man. There's a book I just read that your dad might like, actually. I don't know if he's a book guy.
He's a TV guy.
Okay.
He just, like, in retirement, he's, you know, he just, like, he likes to cut the grass.
Sure.
And he watches TV.
Yeah.
And my mother hates it. They watch Serena together. They love, I think Serena and Venus Williams have saved their marriage. That's, like, the bright spot.
They can root. Well, they got a couple more years.
I know. Like, I've told, like, they get so upset when they lose, but they're old.
Tennis players, they're very old
they're
now.
They're very old, and for them to be playing at that level is amazing.
Yeah.
But it's like...
The end is near.
Yeah. It's like, you guys should, you know... I keep trying to be rational with them about that. Yeah. But,
Well, there's a book called Big Magic that I just read recently, and I really loved it. It was Elizabeth Gilbert. She... I did not read anything else of hers, but she was famous for Eat, Pray, Love, whatever that one, which I heard a lot of, you know, mix and stuff. And
saw the movie.
Okay, and I didn't see the movie or anything, but this book is like, I was worried that it was going to be a little preachy, a little like new agey. Mm-mm. It's like very good practical advice about life as an artist. And that whole thing about don't let dreams become your master, that's a lot of what she talks about. She talks about how to navigate the creative lifestyle, and she uses her own experiences of having success, many years of no success, having a big success, and then going right back to the next book nobody caring about, basically. And so I think it's interesting to hear her perspective. But basically she says the problem a lot of artists make is they put financial expectations on their art, and that's not the way the world works.
Yeah.
We try to put this corporate model of, which doesn't always work there either, but like, oh, if I put out a good product and I work really hard, I will definitely make some money. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, just like, you know, when somebody opens up a restaurant, no matter how good the restaurant is, there could be some random trend unbeknownst to that person that comes, you know, through right afterwards. And it doesn't matter how good their burrito is. Everybody mm-hmm. wants sushi or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but then it's so hard to be like, what if I would have done this? If I would have done that? Maybe. And so she basically says, if you are going to enter a creative life, you have to accept that there is a certain level of chaos that just comes with it, and that you might not ever get to make a living at it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, so if at all possible, if you have something else that's paying the bills, hold on to that thing as long as possible. And she talks about in her own example of, like, I think she's a waitress and some other things. She had published, had a few books published and was making money, was a professional author, agent, and everything. Still kept working that day job until she just couldn't hang on to it anymore because of the obligations of being an author, like, you know, right. appearances and stuff. And I mean, I see comics do that sometimes where they have, like, you know, a great day job.
Yeah.
And they cut it way too fast. It's like, let one of those auditions pull you away from it.
Right.
You know, rather than because some guys will be like, no, I'm going to quit now. And then I'm just going to throw myself out there and dive in head first. And sometimes that works. Oftentimes it does not. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, no, man, keep doing that thing that gives you, keeps you happy, keeps a roof over your head, keeps food on the table, keeps your bills paid. Keep that stress low. That's a better place to be creative when you're not so stressed. Be passionate about the other stuff and just make it a game. See if you can make this other thing so successful that you just don't have time for the day job anymore.
Right.
And if that thing never becomes that successful, then thank God you still have a day job.
Yeah. It's something that's helped me just, like, mentally, just being creative with stand-up. Yeah. It's just sort of like it spills over in a positive way to the day job, to where
yeah.
sometimes if you feel like you get passed over for something,
yeah.
or you feel like you're not as respected as you should be, it's just like, well, I have this thing where
right.
I can, you know, be creative. That feeds my soul and everything yep. like that. And then I don't have to feel as upset or angry.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, and then, you know, it works itself out, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's not what I'm trying to do in my life now, is, like, cut down on bills mm-hmm. so there isn't a financial burden placed on the back of my stand up.
Right.
You know, where it's like, because, like, this year and last year, I've made pretty good money, at least for what I would consider good money, but I have so many bills because of life circumstances and kids, but, like, trying to live in LA and Idaho right now.
Mm-hmm.
That my monthly nut is so high that it's hard to feel successful even when I'm doing well, because it still is, like, barely covering things.
Yeah.
And so, like, Lindsay and I talk about that a lot, where it's like, next year we want to lower the bills as much as possible, live as simply as we can, and that way there just isn't the burden put on it, and just so you can kind of feel good about things.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like financial stress does not usually make for good comedy. Although... Carlin, are you familiar with his story?
Yeah. Well, not 100%, but I know, you know, obviously know Carlin, but yeah.
I've thought about this numerous times. You know, it's funny how people's careers work out, but Carlin's my favorite comic of all time. To me, like, he's the master only because he did so many different things well.
Mm-hmm.
He did autobiographical, he did social commentary, he did stupid jokes.
Sure.
He did, but, like, any form of comedy, the characters, voices, like, he just crushed one-liners, all of it, just mm-hmm. like... So profound, excuse me. But I was like, man, he was so prolific. And I always assumed that was just his passion, was just to put out albums as fast as he could. But he got in the mid to late 70s in a lot of trouble with the IRS, where he owed millions of dollars through I think it said in the interview, like, bad management or something. But anyway... He talked about, like, you know, when you owe back taxes, if you can't pay them, and I know this through some family stuff, that all of a sudden the interest, like the penalties and stuff, can turn a decent sized debt into a huge debt real quick. And that's what happened with him. And so he just had this big monkey on his back of, like, this huge tax burden. And so he didn't have time to hang out in LA and audition. You know, he had thought about, you know, a film career and stuff. He literally couldn't afford to do that. Like, they had a lien on his house. He was going to lose everything he owned if he didn't keep paying this back. And the best way for him to do that at the time was to just pound out the road. And in order to keep reworking these same markets, he had to come back with new material. So like it, and it took him, he said, 18 to 20 years to pay off that tax burden.
Shit.
So like the height of his artistic career, late 70s to late 90s, was he was working off tax debt. That's what kept him grinding out albums.
Wow.
And it's probably what, you know, he always had an angry edge.
That's probably why.
So in a weird way, like, financial stress helped him create amazing art. But I think that's the exception, you know, usually.
Yeah, he's like a genius. And I owe Navient.
But it's
Sally Mae.
But isn't that funny, though? It's like,
yeah,
just the weird circumstances that create art or behind art or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, where did the art start for you, Dan? we're going to get a little autobiographical now.
The art
now.
Start. You know,
where'd you grow up? Was it Idaho?
I grew up mostly in Idaho. Yeah, so I was born late 70s in a little town of 500 people, a little logging town in Idaho. Real young parents. My mom was in high school when she was pregnant with me. I think right after she graduated high school. I get so confused with the timeline, but she was very, very young. A couple years after having me, my dad basically like couldn't find work in this little town to keep going. So he goes up to Anchorage, Alaska, and we follow him. I think looking back, it's funny. I thought when I get the storylines, I think he just like left basically.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Like, there was like a separation or something. Okay. And then all trying to work it out, my mom and I went up there with him.
Yeah.
And then my sister was born up in Alaska. We lived in Anchorage. I was there like kindergarten, first, second, third grade.
What is that like, if you can remember? Is it just cold all the time?
You know, the only thing I remember, no, it's not cold all the time. The summers are very warm.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been there as an adult, but the memories I have of a kid are the weird light situations, daylight situations.
Is that like the movie Insomnia,
yes.
The Pacino?
Yeah, yeah.
Night Mute, Alaska. Is that a real
thing?
It's
a real thing. I don't know about that town.
Okay.
But the light situations are a real thing because the farther you get north of the equator, you know, the longer the days will be,
mm-hmm.
sometimes parts of the year, and I think in the summer, and then the shorter in the winter. Like, it's a very real thing. Like, in even right now, when I go up to Idaho compared to LA, it's stays light longer now because it's the summer,
mm-hmm.
but when I go up there in the winter, it's darker, you know, quicker. And so, but as a kid, it was weird where, you know, in the winter, I remember in Anchorage, first recess still being like midnight black. Like, it's just still, wow. The sun hasn't even started to come out at like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
And I can't remember how long that would go. You know, Anchorage is pretty far south in Alaska. And then I also remember in the summer having to go to bed at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, and listening to kids playing like basketball out in the cul-de-sac. It was like the middle of the day. It was just like when you go farther north in Alaska, there'll be certain, I think there's a couple days, maybe even in Fairbanks, a couple days a year where the sun doesn't go down.
Do people do a lot of drugs up there?
I think so, yeah, to cope with that, because it messes with your head.
Yeah.
And I remember, even as a little kid, I remember being kind of rough. Like, I remember like a lot of playground fights. Like, looking back, it was just like, you know, it's a lot of like military brats,
mm-hmm.
and kind of, you know, I don't know how else to say it, but like abused basically natives, you know, like there's a lot of alcoholism with the mm-hmm. tribes and stuff up there.
Sure.
And this melting pot of just, I remember just getting beat up a lot in my grade school. And then, my parents get divorced, go back to Riggins, Idaho, stay there until eighth grade, and kind of had an Andy Griffith type childhood. Despite the divorce after that, where my grandparents, it was like, you know, go home from school, grandma makes you a snack, you watch Leave It to Beaver on the TV,
mm, yeah,
play a little basketball, come back for a nice dinner where it's like vegetables brought in from the garden.
Did you call dinner supper?
Yeah, I think, okay, so. Yeah. Supper, yeah. It was very like, you know, like 50s Americana.
Sure. Because I think when I think of Idaho, I just mm-hmm. think of the potatoes.
Idaho is southern Idaho, so basically Boise and below.
Mm-hmm.
Is heavy agriculture, where it's pretty flat. It's like a lava field for the most part, foothills mm-hmm. and stuff, some mountains, but largely very kind of high desert, and tons of just thousands and thousands of acres of agriculture. But once you get north into the panhandle, the terrain is very rugged. It's very mountainous, beginning of the Rockies, different little mountain ranges, Bitterroot, I think, and I can't remember the name. It's funny. No one living in where I grew up ever knows the names of the mountains. It's just like, yeah, that's the mountains. It's like you're just surrounded by them.
Sure.
And But so there, it isn't the right kind of land for a lot of farming. So it's a lot of ranching, a lot of cattle and different things, and a lot of kind of just people scrapping weird livings out of these little towns. Like, it used to be a lot of logging is Northern Idaho, but that industry largely kind of went to Canada and other places. Just some weird laws that got passed and price shifts kind of gutted a lot of these towns, and now they're kind of touristy. Like, my town is whitewater rafting is what kind of keeps it alive. But it's very mountainous, very pretty, very scenic. And but yeah, so I grew up there in a town where there was no doctors, no lawyers, no white collar jobs of any time, you know, like an hour from a stoplight.
Wow.
Very, very rural. Went to Las Vegas to live with my dad for 2 years of high school in a high school that had six times the amount of people as my town.
Can you tell the story, I mean, I guess, about you being good at basketball?
Oh.
I want to, because I like that story.
That's funny. Yeah, we were talking in the green room. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny, like, how, just when you're a little kid. Now it's like with the internet, things are different, I feel like, where people are more aware of what's going on in other places.
Right.
But when I grew up, you really didn't know what was going on in the rest of the world. You know, you just had your little community. Mm-hmm. And I was good at basketball for Riggins, you know, like, but in my mind, yeah. I had the Karl Malone posters on the walls. I had Dominic Wilkins posters on the walls.
Yeah.
I was going to the NBA. I would get Sports Illustrated so I could have the dunk tape. And I was like, it's going to happen. I wanted the jump shoes. Yeah. I would play basketball like 2 hours a day. But I was like a barely coordinated 5'2" little skinny white kid in Idaho playing against other goofy, uncoordinated little kids.
Sure.
And in my mind, like, in my mind, I was just like, yeah, but I'm always winning these games.
You were cooking them. Yeah.
I was, you know, I had a crossover. I could do stuff. You know, it's like, I had some good little scoop moves. I'm like, I'm good. And then, and everybody is like known as the jock in the school. Mm-hmm. You know, I was good at baseball too. And then I go again, relatively good. And I go to Las Vegas, and it was such a life altering experience.
Yeah.
Where before freshman year of high school, so I'm just in Las Vegas. I got my dad to sign me up for this Nike basketball camp. I don't even know how I got in. Looking back, must have took anybody. So I get in this Nike development league or something camp, like a 2 week camp. And I show up for the very first practice. And first off, I'm like, I'm definitely the shortest kid there. And then second, like, they do this little scrimmage. There's like maybe 10 of us, and like six of us could dunk, like, well.
Yeah.
And these kids had like proper jumpers. They've been playing like, there was a lot of Mormon basketball leagues in Vegas at the time. Probably still is.
Okay.
Like church leagues. So they played year-round organized basketball. I played in some goofy A4, the lowest division of basketball in the state of Idaho, which is probably the least competitive state.
And how old were you?
And I was, I would have been 14.
Okay.
And and I played, you know, a couple months a year. And literally, I went to that practice thinking, like, I'm going to do some shit in basketball.
Yeah.
And an hour later, I went home being like, I'm done. That's it. Like, I'm not going to ever play basketball further than this.
That happened to me, but not on that high of a level. But
right.
Just, I know that story. Why it was funny to me, because it happened to me. Just like, you think, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to high school. It's the freshman team. It's not even JV. It's the freshman team. I'll be all right. Oh, no.
Man, there are some serious athletes out there.
And then I was one of the leads in the spring musical, so I never looked. I never looked back, Dan. Never looked back. So
that's great, though, man. So, it's funny though. You look back and you're thankful for those.
Yeah.
You know, and now as a parent, I'll deviate here for a second. I'll get back to the beginnings of my how I got into stand up. But like, like my son was really into soccer. Like, he's played soccer. He's 10 now. He's played soccer since he was like 3. And like kind of year round. But at that age, when you're little, it's just kind of like fun. And initially, he was bigger than the other kids and a little faster naturally when he was younger, and could kind of just like be one of the better players just based on he was 20 pounds bigger than these other little kids.
Sure.
But he never has had, and I like it because it's kind of how I am, so I relate to him. He's not uber competitive. He's not like with sports.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like, this game means everything. He just, you know, and I think in kind of a good way. He just like, whatever, let's just go have fun. But there's now other kids who are not there to just have fun. like they're super focused. They don't have the same outside interests. He's a big book guy and imagination guy, likes to goof around. You know, he's making up games with his sister while he's telling these other kids are practicing for 2 more hours.
Right.
And it's just like, but he was talking about wanting to be a professional soccer player and all this. And I saw him go from like starting to then being on the bench to then being on the bench more. And I saw his team go from being one of the better teams to definitely the worst team in their soccer league, you know, and they're having fun. But I finally had a talk with him where he's like, because this is a year-round thing. It's a lot of work for all the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, you know, whenever I'm with the kids, every weekend there's games, there's practices every week. So, and at some point, we just kind of all got together, like his mom and stepdad and me and soon-to-be stepmom. We're like, what are we doing? Why are we all sacrificing for something he clearly isn't going to go further with?
You guys had to have a summit.
Yeah. We had like a talk with him.
Yeah.
And I remember his.
Was it all of you guys and him at a table?
It was just me.
Okay.
It's a star because I'm out of the four of us more like.
Into it.
And well, can talk to him about these things or whatever. And we were just after a game where he got beat like 9-0, his team. A game where at one point he was like skipping around the field, not like following the flow of the game, you know? And I asked him how the game went. And he was like, oh, good. I thought we did great. And I was like, dude, we need to have a talk about the meaning of the word great. And I just kind of broke it down where I'm like, I love you and I know you love soccer, but like things are getting more competitive now. Some of these kids take it more seriously.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to them, to your teammates, for you not to really care about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, and if you really want to be a professional soccer player, this is what you want to do. We have to reevaluate everything. You have to practice on your own, couple hours a day when you're home. And when I started really kind of breaking it down, he was just like, ugh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to do any of that. And then, you know, and then he made his decision based on that conversation. He's going to take a break from soccer.
Yeah.
And he didn't really love it. He just was doing it because he had done it.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know.
Well, now it's so much more. It's a business now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like practicing the violin. Like you have, like we were talking, I guess you may have been in the green room, but I know at least John and I were talking about it's like having a quarterback coach when you're 12. Like a guy, like there's this guy, there's this quarterback guru that's behind Cam Newton, Johnny Manziel, tons of other guys.
Yeah.
And it's just
it's business.
It is what it is. Like there's scholarships riding on it.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know, like and as a parent, can you really be I don't know. You have to your kid has to be is there any self-awareness anymore with young kids? With kids now, because like parents
not
are like tell them they can be whatever you want. My dad, like the bit that I have, my dad said, you're not mean enough.
Right. I love that one. Yeah.
My dad would talk to me, be like, you know, what you did here, you know, that was good.
Yeah.
You know, he would tell me like it was.
Yeah.
And
a lot
I
of kids don't get that anymore.
Yeah.
Man, it's funny. I'm working on a book of parenting stories, like real life parenting advice. And that's the first story I wrote was just this weird culture of everyone gets a medal.
Right.
Everyone can do everything. And it's not good because the shit does hit the fan with that. What happens is you get these kids who are told they can be anything they want. And because no one wants to be the bad guy, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And you give them a little dose of reality because that makes the kid sad. No one wants to see their kid sad. But they're doing them a huge disservice. Because you pump them up, like you're awesome, and chances are, statistically, they're not awesome at what you're telling them they're awesome at. You know, there's only going to be a little bit of awesome. That's the bell curve. Only a small percentage gets to be at the top of the charts.
Right.
No matter how good, you know, everybody is overall. And so then they go out into the real world, and let's say, you know, they've dedicated their whole life to soccer, for example, as opposed to academics, and then you know, they're not, they get a college partial scholarship, you know, whatever. But then in college, instead of using their degree and thinking about business, they just get whatever's easy to study and focus again on soccer. And then they graduate and they realize they do a tryout. And they, if they're lucky enough to get a tryout, don't get on the team. And all of that is done. And then they have to scramble for a job that they're completely unprepared for because the previous 20 years of their life has been focused on this one thing that is now in an instant done. It's all done.
Right.
And they have to scramble, and usually that doesn't work out well. You know, it's tough. You know, I feel bad for people. It's like because these kids now, they have this weird sense of entitlement. It's like, I noticed when I was a kid, I expected to pay dues. When I became an adult, I expected to work at the bottom And because that's what my family had done before me, we were very blue collar.
Yeah.
You know, like you work hard, you start at the bottom, you're thankful for what you get, and you work your way up. Mm-hmm. And now it's like you talk to kids and they're like, nah, I just want to have my own business that makes millions of dollars right away.
Do you see that in comedy a lot now?
Yes. Because YouTube changed.
Yeah.
It's the same way that reality TV changed, I think, a generation, where it's like when Paris Hilton and those other fucking abominations on our society became famous for no discernible talent.
Mm-hmm.
It gave kids everywhere this real thing to point to and be like, well, they didn't work hard and now they're famous and rich, so I can do that. You know, there's other things they don't think about, like famous family, blah, 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 money.
Yeah.
But you just see like, and I think like with comedy, it's like, you know, Bo Burnham is an example of somebody who had a half hour special before he had done like, I think he was given it before he had done 10 shows. Because of YouTube videos. And again, he's super talented.
Yeah, he just had a special drop that's supposed to be really good.
Oh, really? Yeah.
On Netflix, yeah.
Yeah. No, he's had a great... I mean, and I met him. He's very, very intelligent. Super. But people don't... They don't think about all the talent. They just think about, oh, he didn't have to do open mics. He didn't have to do the road. He just did YouTube, and he blew up.
Yeah.
You know? And same thing with like... And you can, you know, we're doing a podcast now. People point to like, you know, Marin and stuff too. It's like, and they forget about all the dues he paid beforehand, but it's
years
like
for and years. And years.
But they think like, well, he just did this and then he got, you know, an empire. And so there isn't a sense, at least in LA, I don't like working with a lot of the LA younger comics.
Really?
Because they do have this, yeah, they're just also convinced that they're just going to sell a show and they're going to like be this star and just like immediately. You know, because if they don't, they're not interested in working the road.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. Not many of them. They're not interested in, especially not interested in going emceeing and featuring on the road in like rougher clubs and just grinding it out and building an act.
That's how you grow. I mean, that's the only way. I mean, I remember the first time I went on the road with Maranzio Vance. I don't know if you know him.
I know that name.
Well, he's on the George Lopez's show.
Oh, cool.
On TV Land.
Yeah.
Really funny dude. Got the opportunity to meet him and work. He's like, oh, just come do Baltimore Comedy Factory with me. I was probably four or five years in something at the time. And I had done thought I was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and I do the shows and I was like, oh, I need to get better.
Yeah.
I really need to refocus. And then that it helped.
I know the road toughened. I mean, you do see these guys. Like, I'm so thankful for guys like Bill Burr, for example.
Yeah.
Where there's a guy and people are like, dude, he's so funny. And it's like, well, yeah. I mean, he focused primarily on stand-up, almost exclusively on stand-up.
Yeah.
And stand-up related things like radio and podcasts.
Sure.
Things where you're still working on your voice
mm-hmm.
for like 20 years. And then he started to hit. Where it's like, man, he worked his ass off for two decades. It's like, yeah, of course he's good.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm glad that there is examples of that. But, you know, like, to circle back with kind of my upbringing about, like, people, you know, having that reality check
mm-hmm.
because they thought they were good at one thing and then they go, like, you know, to the bigger thing. I also was told I was funny, you know, like in Riggins.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because of the basketball thing and other stuff, I did think, well, yeah, funny for here.
Yeah, okay.
But that doesn't mean anything. So I went to college and didn't think anything of it. And then there was a little college theater thing. I went to Gonzaga. It was like 3 hours away from where I grew up in Spokane, Washington, across the border there.
Bulldogs, right?
Bulldogs, yeah.
Morrison.
Morrison, Dan Dickow. And
Stockton.
John Stockton, of course, he has the most successful grad. There was like Roni Turioff.
Yeah.
He played for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actually now there's a guy for the Celtics. Real goofy looking white dude. We're good at pumping those guys out.
Olynyk?
Yes, he was a zag.
That fucking got the Golden State Warriors their ring. Well, so we'd like to think because he broke Kevin Love's shoulder.
Oh, that's right.
He should get a ring from the Warriors.
That's right. Yeah. But so I went to Gonzaga. They had an SNL type theater show.
Okay.
Sketch and music.
Yeah.
And I did it, and it went really well. For campus. And it helped me become known around campus. Like as
how big is Gonzaga?
At that time, it was 3,500 students.
Okay.
I bet it's 8 or 9 now. It's gotten bigger, I think.
That's double the size of what my undergrad was. It was like 1,400.
Okay.
Now it's a university. So.
Okay. Yeah. And where was that?
Mount St. Mary's College. It's in Emmitsburg, Maryland.
There's a few of those.
We lost in the first round to Michigan State when they won.
Okay.
Like 99.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Small, yeah. Another small yeah. Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so anyway, I did that and people like, oh, you're so funny. You're so funny. But again, because of prior life experience, I thought, I'm like, well, yeah, but funny for here.
Sure.
And so I, again, didn't think anything of it. Graduated with a psych degree, tried to get a job in social work. Did get a job in social work, but it was not, it was so low paying. I was like, well, this isn't going to work.
And that's pretty brutal too,
and
right?
It's brutal. And that's the other thing too. I couldn't handle the thought of basically definitely always being poor and definitely always being depressed because of the way I start to view the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I started working at a gym, just other random jobs. And then my ex-wife at the time, I had never even been to a comedy club, didn't know about them, didn't think about stand-up ever. And she was like, you should go try this open mic. She had seen me do the sketch comedy in college. And I think based on, you know, people thinking I was funny in high school, people thinking I was funny in college, I'm like, okay, I'll try it. And I did always want to have some kind of creative job. I always wanted to be an artist of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little kid, I wanted to be an author. That was my secret dream. I wanted to be like Stephen King. In college, I took some personality test, Myers-Briggs or something, mm-hmm. And the only thing I lined up with was creative stuff. But I just didn't know. I'm like, I couldn't paint that well. I didn't know how to do music that well. I could play guitar, but not good enough for a career in my mind. And then I just did this stand-up thing, and it went well enough to come back the next time. And then basically just I could just repeat that. Each time it went well enough to come back the next time. And it just was a very organic thing. Like, you know, I did the open mic a few times.
How old were you?
22.
Okay.
And then the guy running the club, he was like, hey, man, we should have you come back and MC. I'll give you like $25. And I'm like, what? I could get some money?
Yeah.
It was a perfect storm looking back. There was a weekend room in Spokane, Washington that did five shows, one Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday, I believe, open mic on Sunday. And they didn't book out of town middles or openers. They only booked out of town headliners.
Okay.
And they had a very small group of comics in the area. And so they had a problem where they didn't have enough new bodies. So they were wearing the audience out on the same 10 jokes. People
yeah.
who didn't write much either. It was like 10 people who never worked on new stuff. Mm. And I wasn't that good, but I had stage presence from doing like being in a little band in college and doing theater. And so for again, talk about like, you know, for where you're at, going back to Idaho basketball, I was good for that group, mm-hmm. you know, like early sure. on. And the reward was basically unlimited stage time. I could work there every weekend. Had no idea how lucky I was to have that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Spokane happens to be in the middle at that time of all these one-nighters. They used to call them triple runs. Guy David Tribble would book all these bar gigs where you do like one night in Spokane, one night in Lewis, Idaho, one night in Bozeman, Montana, blah, blah. $100 to open, $200 to close. You know, just mm-hmm. a crappy gig, whatever. But a lot of these headliners, they didn't want to drive all the way to these areas. They would like fly into Spokane. And then he found out that I'm living there. I could do 20, 30 minutes good enough. I had a car that was reliable. And then that got me a ton of that work because I was dependable. Wasn't that funny, but I could, and then it gave me way more stage time. And then it just kind of snowballed. But I was very like, I still at that time was like, man, let's see how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
Did well in a comedy competition in Seattle. A guy liked me there, comic locally, David Crow, brought me on the road in the Midwest. Still was like, let's see how this goes. And then some club owner in the Midwest had randomly had a meeting like the week before I was working his club where somebody was looking for new clients to manage. That guy liked me, so now I had a manager. You know, and again, it was always like, okay, well, let's give it another year or two. And then that guy got me in some festivals, got me on Comedy Central. But it was just like the whole time, I think until about 8 years in, I was still like, eh, let's see how this goes.
That's kind of where I am now, but I'm just older than you were
back then. Yeah.
But like I like had the Montreal
flirting
with me for twice.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I didn't do it. The last 2 years they didn't see me, but I feel like I've still grown.
Yep.
But when you did, how old were you? What did you do Montreal before?
Montreal. Yeah, Montreal is what kind of introduced me to.
Uh-huh.
I did it in, oh man, 2005, I think.
Okay.
And I started doing stand-up in 2000 at an open mic.
Okay.
So I was real green, but I had a different style a little bit. I've always had the same, I don't know, sense of humor, but I was much drier and absurdist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quick jokes. So it just kind of like, that's what I was into when I got it. I got real infatuated with like quick jokes. Probably just because I loved Hedberg and Stephen Wright, looking back, to be honest.
Sure.
And so I think, I don't know, I just stood out as far as stylistically different at that time.
Yeah.
It got me in. And then, but the industry is so fickle. It's weird, man. It's got me in, got me Comedy Central, late night. And then Comedy Central took a liking to me after I did Live at Gotham. I got a half hour and then an hour. And then I had a rude awakening in the business where it's like I rode all the way to my hour special thinking that like if you just be really funny and everything will just like take care of itself. And then the hour special I did for Comedy Central was reviewed well. You know, like it made like iTunes like top 10 of the year.
Okay.
Laughs Bin at the top 10 of the year.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was just me thinking it was good, but it didn't get great ratings. And that was my very first encounter with the harsh reality of the business. Mm. Based on it not getting good ratings, Comedy Central at the time essentially told my manager, like, yeah, we're done with him. Jesus. Like, yeah, like we will not be giving him more specials. And so it was just kind of crushing where I was just like, oh, Jesus. And it didn't turn into a lot of extra. It has trickled into fans over the years. But at the time, it's not like after it debuted, then 2 weeks later, I'm playing to a packed house. It was
sure.
Kind of the same.
What were you doing before? Were you working your material out in the clubs, like touring, like doing like
to get the
Funny Bones and all that, or yeah. Improvs? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All my material for every album I've done has always been built in the clubs.
Yeah.
That one album, Crazy with a Capital F, was built more in colleges. I did a ton of colleges for a couple of years.
What is that like? I mean, I guess at the time you were of age.
At the time, I was like a immature 31 or something.
Okay.
And I was super absurdist.
Yeah.
You know, like I leaned heavily on that side of my brain. So you didn't have to have any life experience to enjoy my stuff.
Okay.
It was all just weird shit.
Yeah, see, that's why I don't think I could play college.
And you know what? And it's changed for me. I went from being 1 year the most booked college act, I think, in the country.
Okay.
Like I did NACA Nationals a couple times, the big conference.
Sure.
One time I got 90 bookings at one conference. Like I was just doing a ton of them. And then like all of a sudden, you know what? Not all of a sudden. After my divorce, life became way more real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which happened right after that special. That special came out after I got divorced, but I got divorced kind of during the recording and then waiting for that special to come out. And in my next album, that was like an album called Crazy with a Capital F. And then my third album was called Hear This. My first album was like stuff for my half hour and stuff and just absurd as well. And Hear This was like angry. And mm-hmm. It was like, and I talked about getting a DUI in it. And it was like real life and real perspective. Like here's what's going on. And actually on Pandora and other places, it's the album that has gotten the best liked the most plays, but it just wasn't college anymore, you know? And I remember doing a few colleges after that and just not doing well because, you know, they're when you're 19 and 20 and dad's paying for everything.
You want to hear that shit.
And you're getting 19-year-old pussy every weekend and, you know, and drunk. It's like, you're like, life is amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
I'm going to make $1 million. And then you don't want to hear some dude who's 33 being like talking about shit going wrong.
Right.
You know, it's just like, oh, why is it a downer?
Yeah.
Whereas a regular club crowd will love it.
I feel like I do well in clubs and not in Brooklyn.
Right.
I sound like I suck in Brooklyn.
I know what you mean.
But I'm usually surprised when stuff goes well. Like the last time I was in Bushwick, I did a great show.
Yeah.
And it was fun. And I was like, oh, okay. But yes,
that's because you're a good person, though, man. Because I will say, like, why you don't do as well in Williamsburg. I mean, for me, I've always like fuck the alt scene. Like, it's like I felt like I've been more original and more alt than a lot of successful alt comics. And there are guys in that group that I like, guys and girls. Yeah. But man, there are so many posers and so many. What I hate about that scene and the people that enjoy that scene, it's like you think you're so artsy and so smart, but you're really more mindless than the supposedly mindless people you look down on.
Yeah.
Where you go to these places wearing your weird, you know, thrift stop androgynous clothing, and you got your eccentric mustache.
Yeah.
And you got the same horn rim glasses that every other one of you motherfuckers wears. Because you're all sheep.
You're all the same.
You're just eccentric. You're just weird looking sheep.
Yeah.
You know, you're making fun of the plain looking sheep in the Midwest. You're just a different herd. And then if you don't play that game, they're not into it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you. It's so weird. I've watched sets in L.A. where it's like the dude who walks on, who's like very like malnourished looking, and his hair is messed up, and he talks in a weird voice, and he does something, and then he just doesn't even do jokes. He just does like interesting premises, followed by references to things they like TV shows and stuff, and murders. And I'm like, fuck and you murders. Guys. Yeah, he kills. And then somebody
else.
Yeah, he murders. Sorry.
I thought you meant like murder in general. Sorry.
Oh, no. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
And then somebody else comes up with like crafted material.
Yeah.
And they look at it like, oh, it's too roadie. It's too hack. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, you mean good. You have that mistaken for. So people who put time into stuff are wrong. Okay. Yeah,
because I was talking to another comic about it. Like, I just like, is it really beneficial to do? But it's like, I'm at the place where it's like, I need to go where they book me. Like, that's where I'm at.
I'm still there.
Yeah, and I'm starting to go, like, to do a little bit of the road. Like, do a little bit of the Northeast.
Yeah.
Like, go, like, into, like, Westport, Connecticut. I did a show there where it's, like, a wealthy, rich type of clientele.
Yeah.
Same person, the same act that you've seen.
Right. That's good, man.
And just
that's
try
how you
to
have
be,
to do it.
Try to be that guy.
Yep.
And you know, like that seems to be working for me.
Yeah.
But it's like,
and that's all you can do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the alt thing can work out for some people if they're super alty, and I guess, you know, there's like a network for it now.
Yeah.
And you can get plugged into certain festivals and things.
Right.
But if you're not that guy, then you're not that guy, you know?
Right.
And I do think a lot of those alty Williamsburg, Silver Lake kind of comics, I know a lot of them, they'll do really well in these little supposedly important shows that don't pay anything in those markets.
That's another thing.
And they don't get to the top of the alt heap where they can draw enough in the independent rooms around the country to make money.
Yeah.
And they don't get staffed on a show and they don't become a star of a show and they just live in poverty in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess try and pay their, you know, bills with accolades from other very poor artists. You know?
Damn.
it's like, okay. You know, my friend David Crow, he had a really funny saying a long time. He was getting in an argument. David Crow is a Seattle comic who's kind of, it's interesting. He's gone the more corporate comedy route.
Okay.
But he's one of the most unique, intelligent comics I've ever worked with. He's just a really, really good comic. Never just got his big break or whatever, but really funny comic. And and the alt scene started, he's been in Seattle forever prior to the alt scene. And in my mind, he's more artistic-wise alt-y than a lot of these guys wearing weird clothes.
Okay.
Like, he actually is doing more original things. Very creative. But he was getting in some argument with this guy who was, like, the big guy at the time in the alt scene. And while they were... And this guy was just talking about, like, basically, like, not selling out and just doing, you know, super artistic stuff. And he doesn't want to do mainstream clubs because it's too homogenized and blah, blah. And just kind of shitting on all comedy that's not alt.
Yeah.
And while they're having this discussion, they're working together on this house that David owns and that he's fixing up as a rental, and he's hired this other guy to kind of help him for the day.
Mm-hmm.
I guess David said he's very outspoken sometimes, but he goes, you know, for me, you know what the main difference between a regular comic and an alt comic is? And he goes, the regular comic is the guy who owns the house, and the alt guy is the guy he hired to help work on the house.
Oh, shit.
I was like, ah, zap.
Oh, boy. Wow.
So,
well,
take that to the thrift store.
I know there was this.
Which has changed. That was like 7 years ago. Now the nerds rule.
Well, there's a thing. There was this list. Brooklyn Magazine published this list called the 50 Funniest People in Brooklyn.
Right.
And for a good going on hell 3 weeks now, comics have been talking about it on Facebook,
okay,
or like complaining why they weren't on the list or making fun of it.
Sure.
The people that were on the list were trying to play it off, but then they were like, look at me still.
Sure.
And it's just been so for this list. And it's just like, it's just a list. It's nice. It's good for you if you're on it.
Right.
And if you're not, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But they were so upset.
Oh yeah, that's like, man, any kind of when you put like 10 comics to watch or best or lists or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're just opening a can of worms for, because it is all so subjective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's weird. I feel like I've been lucky where when I've been doing well industry wise, I've realized that. Like, I was never like, well, I'm doing this because I'm the best.
Yeah.
You know, it's like at the time I was like, hey, I got some lucky breaks.
I'm working.
Yeah, I got some. And I feel that same way now. You know, it's like I get pissed now where I'm just like, oh, those lists, those things would be nice to like keep the name out there for monetary reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's like as far as ego, it's like, I don't know. I finally figured out a while ago that like those people who create those lists, the people who decide who get into festivals, the people who decide who get on shows, network, they're just as dumb as the rest of us. You know? You'd like to think like in some sense of fairness.
The views
that you
of
want.
Dan Cummins do not reflect the views of
Nah, man. It's no, like
I know what you mean.
They're people. They're people who fuck up just like everybody else. You know, sometimes they make great calls and some of those people in those positions I have met, and it's not me being subjective, and it's like they are fucking dumb. I've met some dumb people in positions of social influence where I'm just like, wow, how did you fail upward? Like, whose dick did you suck to get this position? whose nephew are you to get this position? I mean, it's mind-boggling.
And I can believe it.
And sometimes they're not paid that well. Sometimes these like people who like are bookers on certain things, it's actually not that great of a job. And so they gave it to this person because they like being in control or having that power. But they're not like, oh, we gave it to them because they're awesome. They're just a fantastic employee.
There's a lot of bookers that have like this power that you're just like, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's others that are great.
On
you
these
know?
Shows that you don't get paid on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Man, and that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, man, where you just got to like, it gets tricky when you try to monetize it, but you just got to like focus on the art.
Mm-hmm.
Make it as best as you can. That is one thing I've always thought. Like the only thing I've ever wanted to do the entire time I've been doing this, and when I'm in this mindset, I always have the most fun is when I'm just challenging myself.
Yeah.
When I'm like, you know, can you write a better bit than you put on the last album? Can you become a better comic? Can you become a better performer? Challenge yourself. And whenever I'm doing that and I genuinely feel like I'm improving, I'm happy. And when I'm not, I'm miserable.
And is that how you combat the bullshit?
Yeah.
Like what we just talked about?
Because all that stuff, I mean, it definitely, I allow myself to let it drive me crazy a moment.
Yeah.
And you have bad days, you know, where you get an offer for some show or you're like, I had this happen recently where it's like some new show and I was to host and it was between me and one other person. And I've had like an incredible amount of second places, which then nobody ever, it's the same as last place because you just don't get the gig.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
And man, some of those days are real hard, you know, and you know, and I really question, you know, what am I doing? What am I doing with my career? And I get real down on myself and then I go write and then I go sit on my computer or I get my notebook out and I think like, be better or quit. Mm-hmm. Or just do something else because no one's holding a gun to your head making you do this.
That's good to hear because at your level, even though like you obviously you want to go farther than you are now.
Yeah, I just want to be better.
But it's like you always have something. Well, I want to do what Dan's doing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I want to do a weekend at a club.
Yeah.
And then go to another club. So it's just like.
Yeah.
It's just good to know that we're soldiers in the fight.
Yeah, man. But it's the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's because I feel like this. I feel the same way when it's like. Like a couple weeks ago, I was like, fuck, I wanted those gigs.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, well, got to keep going.
I remember somebody telling me that it's just like you just experience the same thing on different levels. And I remember at the time thinking like, whatever, I wish I was at your level.
Yeah.
I mean, nice to, you know, it's like, but like, you know, some people like comics, you know, I have guys I've met at clubs now that started doing stand-up because of me. And I'm always like, what? Why would you want to do what I do? Like in my head, I'm like, that's what, are you fucking crazy?
Yeah.
But it's like, I forget that like to them, that what I'm doing looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, but then to me, the guy, well, like I could throw a name now. It's like, I want to be doing what Segura or Kanane is at right now.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I mean, maybe I'm delusional, but in my mind, I feel like I'm just as talented. So I'm like, I want to be there.
Yeah.
They want to be, you know, where Marin or Rogan or somebody else, that person wants to be where Chris Rock. It's like,
yeah,
you know, because you're driven creatively, you know? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just want to keep getting better. And then I'm not as narcissistic, though, as some of them, where I always look. There was a guy, one of the coolest Hollywood stories to me, Rick Moranis.
Okay.
Random left turn. That dude, people forget, but he was, you know, he was on top of the comedy world for a little bit in the movies. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Ghostbusters. He left to raise his kids. He moved back to Canada. I believe his wife had died, and he just left the business. For like 10 years at the height of his, you know, I mean, he was a guy who got paid millions to do movies. There was more offers coming in, and he was just like, nah, I'm good. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of guy, Steve Martin, in another way, he still does movies and stuff like that, but he was doing arenas. And then he was like, nah, this isn't fun anymore. Now he plays a fucking banjo at, you know, bluegrass shows around, but I bet he's, you know, happy.
Yeah.
It's like my girl and I talk about that a lot too, where it's like, I will consider this whole thing a success. I already consider what's been so far a success because I was able to pay bills, mm-hmm. help raise my kids, and be creative and do what I love. As long as I can continue to do that, I will feel like successful at this business, you know? And if ever becomes a thing where I'm like becoming bitter and starting to hate the business, then I truly hope I have the strength to walk away. You know, or if I become incredibly financially successful but just don't enjoy it, don't have the same joy for creating, I hope I just stop. You know, I don't want to be, you know, Willie Mays playing for the Mets. You know, it's like, you know, in that situation, I just want to like, I don't know, I just have so much respect for people who create just to be creators. And then whenever that whim goes away for whatever reason, they're just done. That's that book again, too, that Big Magic. It's like, you know, we don't have to do this podcast. We don't have to do this show tonight. No one's making us do any of this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, have fun with it or quit. You know, it's like...
That's a good way to leave it. Let's go do a show, Dan.
And have fun. Have fun.
Thanks so much, Dan. Thank you, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for doing it. All right. Take it easy, everybody.